Okay, time can resume. So we ended with this claim that M theory in flat space via this boosting procedure was related to the theory of NT0 brains, and just the theory of NT0 brains, which is a kind of matrix quantum mechanics. Now I'm going to give you one more fact, which I'll just state without derivation, though it's perhaps intuitive. If we wanted to come down to string theory from M theory, we would need to compactify one extra dimension. Let's just call it the one dimension, the one direction. If we compactified such a direction, we can ask, what is the matrix model in this case? With a little bit of work, you can show that all that will happen to this matrix quantum mechanics, and this is really quantum mechanics, is that it gets promoted from quantum mechanics to a 1 plus 1 dimensional field theory, and this X1 turns into a connection, let's call it D1 if you wish, in a new direction. So you gain a wall volume direction, and your gauge theory just becomes a gauge theory in one dimension higher. So if you wanted to describe string theory in this setup, you end up studying maximally supersymmetric Yang Mills in 1 plus 1 dimensions. So you end up studying a theory with an action, and now I'm going to write the action in terms of the parameters of your original string theory, which will be useful for us. So it looks like 1 over L string squared is a trace, 1/2 xi squared, and here I is running from 1 to 8. Those are the 8 transverse directions to this string, if you wish, plus a g string squared L string to the 4th. Is that approval or disapproval? The computer is unhappy about something. Minus 1 over 4 pi squared g string squared L string to the 4th. There's some commutator term, xi xj squared, plus some fermions, which we won't worry about. So this, in this theory, the Yang-Mills coupling...
This is integral d2.
Thank you. This is an integral of, say, d sigma d tau. So if you want to think about this, this is going to be a theory on... It's actually on a circle plus time with a coupling constant, which is given in terms of our original g string and our original string length, L string. So this is a theory that's not conformally invariant. It's a theory that has a dimension-full coupling. And what we expect is in the limit where g-string is very small, where the theory is perturbative, the Yang-Mills coupling is very large, we're down in the deep infrared, this theory should recover for us string field theory. So this thing, this model, so known as the matrix string description of string theory, or matrix strings, is studied by Marshall and by Graf Belinde Belinde. It's a very beautiful sort of ultraviolet completion of string field theory. So I should just stress that as G string goes to zero, G Yang Mills diverges, and we're in the deep infrared of the theory. This is reversing the role of couplings, right? Weak coupling corresponds to strong coupling in the matrix model. And it's a dimension-full coupling. Both these things are critical for us. It turns out that all of these features will appear in our cosmological model. So can we just go ahead and apply this procedure of making a space light-like circle space-like by mixing it with X plus? And the answer is no, we can't do that. Our dilaton itself depended on X plus, so we don't have the symmetries to directly apply it, but we can do it in a slightly different way. So let's try to derive a matrix model for our light-like linear dilaton. So again, I'm actually not going to start in M theory because we were starting with string theory. So we'll start with type 2A.
Before you do this, is there a direct derivation of this from type 2A?
Yes. You can actually, the procedure I'm about to describe in type 2A, you can actually use it directly to get this model. Roughly, you will again compactify X minus, and you will go through this boosting procedure, which will take you to type 2B, and you have to do an S duality because the string coupling is blowing up. And you start it off with momentum on that circle. By that T duality, it will become winding. By that S duality, it will become D strings. And the theory on that on those D strings is exactly this Yang-Mills theory. So that's actually the procedure we're going to perform now. So, well, something close to it anyway. So again, we're just starting with flat space and a dilaton that depends on x plus. We will compactify x minus. We're free to do so. It's the symmetry of the problem. But we can't mix x minus and x plus to make the circle space-like anymore. Doesn't make sense because x plus is appearing explicitly in G string. So we'll pick some other direction. Let's call it 1. And we'll make an identification slightly space-like by mixing it with this one direction. No big deal. We'll now perform a Lorentz transformation. For the sake of confusing you all, x and x. Let's see. So, we will. These x's are going to be related to a different set of x's. And the relation is a Lorentz transformation, a slightly different one from the one we use in the flat space case. But that's okay. Oh, do I have it backwards? Oh, I have it backwards. Okay. Sorry. These new x's, I'll just call them big x's, are related to the original ones by Lorentz transformation. X plus over 2 epsilon plus x minus over epsilon x 1 over epsilon and x 1 x plus plus x 1. So we're again making a Lorentz transformation. Leaves invariant the metric. And after making this transformation, in terms of our big x's, we arrive at exactly the same metric, but our dilaton is modified. So our dilaton now becomes minus q epsilon x plus, so there's a factor of epsilon appearing, and our circle identification, which was light-like, now becomes space-like in the one direction. Maybe I did it backwards.
You have your capital and lowercase mixed up.
Oh, you're kidding. I did it backwards again?
Because you started with Q.
Oops, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. These should be small. These are the original ones, and these will be the new ones. I had it right in the beginning. Is everyone now thoroughly confused? If not, I will try harder. Okay, so in terms of these new x's, the metric is again flat, and the dilaton is again light-like, but with this epsilon factor. Okay, so now we have a theory on a space-like circle with n units of momentum on that circle in type 2A. And that circle is shrinking because epsilon is going to 0. So we should T-dualize the circle to take ourselves to type 2B. And then in type 2B, we'll see that the effective string coupling is divergent. So we should S-dualize. So we perform a T and then an S-duality, and we arrive at a theory of D-strings, very similar to this theory. Now I wish I had one more blackboard. Let's see. So, after T and an S duality, we'll define a parameter R, which goes like epsilon over L string, and we have a metric in space-time, we will actually need this to check that this that the physics is actually just the physics of the lowest open string mode. This is a metric in type 2B now. Okay. I'm sorry, is this readable down there? Is anyone awake to read it from the back? and X1 after this TNS duality is a finite circle of order. No, not a finite circle. It's still epsilon dependent. But it looks like that. So, and we have n D strings. So, what to do now? Well, what we want to do is describe the theory of these D strings in this cosmological background. And that should give us a non-perturbative definition of our original light-like linear dilaton. And then we want to understand what's going on near this strong coupling region. So if you want to cheat, there's a very quick shortcut to get an answer. But let's not cheat for the moment. Well, you can actually guess what the answer would be. Let's actually try to derive it. So we start with dBi. D tau, d sigma, e to the minus phi. Maybe there should be a minus sign in here. Usual dBi, dx mu, dx nu, g mu, plus your R string squared. And we'll expand around the classical ground state. Now, it's rather nice in that, in this background, if you set S to 0, the time dependence cancels between the string coupling and the metric. So we can find a nice static solution to expand around. So we can check that this is a good solution to R, and the xi's are 0, or I going from 2 to 8. So this is a static solution, and f equals 0. Thank you. So this is a static solution, and it serves as a good ground state about which we can expand to look for fluctuations. So we do precisely that. We expand. So the expansion really just involves a fluctuation in x minus, which is going to give us back our extra scalar field that's disappeared. Root 2r plus some fluctuation which will normalize as root 2y. Expand out these determinants, you see, what do you get? Well, the answer turns out to be remarkably simple. When you expand this out in this background, you find a theory of matrix strings, this maximally supersymmetric theory, with the only change being that G string is now, as you might have guessed originally, time dependent. It goes with worksheet time. So the all the places in which G string explicitly appears here now have factors of e to the minus tau appearing, or e to the plus tau, depending on how G string appears. But that's the sole change. Now this theory is not conformally invariant. So if we rescale the metric, we're also rescaling the coupling non-trivially. So we can actually absorb this factor, this time dependence in G string, into a time dependent wall sheet. So this thing can be written as a time dependent wall sheet with a metric, a two dimensional metric, of this form. Remember, sigma is periodic. Sigma is here. sigma is this S1 on which we've wrapped our Yang-Mills theory. So, well, this metric may not look familiar because in the very beginning I changed coordinates and wrote the Milne metric in terms of variables in which x was periodic, but it was like minus dt squared plus t squared dx squared. If you wrote it in terms of conformal time, you would find exactly this metric. This is the metric for Milne space. But this is not Milne space as a target space. This is Milne space as our string Walshy. So the picture that we get out of this is that studying the light-like linear dilaton apparently amounts to studying matrix strings compactified not on a time-independent Walshy, but on Milne, two-dimensional Milne space. So if you recall, as I mentioned very briefly at the beginning, Milne looks like sort of like a, you know, starting from a big bang, there's a circle that is expanding. But there is a big bang where you start. So this big bang point coincides precisely with the big bang in spacetime. So there's a mapping of the singularity on the Walshy to the singularity in spacetime. Well, what have we gained? We seem to have mapped one difficult problem into another difficult problem. Except, I'll claim for you that this is a theory that doesn't involve any gravity and doesn't involve any open string oscillators. The claim is this is really quantum field theory on a curved spacetime with no gravitational back reaction to worry about. So at least naively, we should be, you might hope we would be better off. We might have more of a chance of understanding what's going on. So the question amounts to, can you make sense out of Yang-Mills on a space like Milne? Now what's surprising, if you start going through the literature, Burrell and Davis and all the other papers people have written on quantum field theory in curved spacetime, and you quickly learn that the only quantum field theories people have really studied are free in this background. So the question is, does an interacting theory, like this Yang-Mills theory, really make sense on Milne? Does gravitational back reaction make the theory bad? How do you pick an initial state? There are many choices of vacua here, at least two natural choices. There's an adiabatic vacuum, which is a vacuum with respect to this time, and there's a there's a conformal vacuum, which is a vacuum with respect to this time, conformal time. There's an adiabatic vacuum with respect to the original T that I defined in the beginning. And one is natural from the perspective of the orbifold. This is natural from the perspective of conformal field theory. But we have to pick some initial state here and propagate it. And at late time, it should turn into some perturbative string state that we could hope to study. So let me elaborate on this picture. Because the picture is actually quite pretty at this stage.
Can one understand this trajectory for you, that essentially in the electron gauge you effectively are identifying two components of the world sheet with two components of space-time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's going on here? Or is that too naive?
No, it's actually not too naive. If you look at string field theory in this background, the only modification appears to be the just adding in a time-dependent G-string. And in that respect, you know, there is a natural gauge that you should pick, which is identifying tau with x-plus and going from there. So in that respect, it's not naive, but you would not have seen from string theory, target space string theory, this structure, which is actually perturbative Yang-Mills, which is not conformally invariant. So to see this, these degrees of freedom requires an argument like this.
About why you don't look at other fluctuations, they just drop out, or what?
Oh, the other fluctuations are actually there, the xi's and everything, are in these scalar degrees of freedom. I mean, this was the only one where you fluctuate, so this is a gauge choice. We make x1 sigma over r, x plus to be tau, that's actually just gauge choice. And then these guys fluctuate.
Okay.
And those give us our 8 scalars of the matrix string. This late time region where tau is getting large is actually identified with late times and space time when you're in the perturbative string regime.
Because I guess I had always thought of this collection as like T2L, so spade direction gets small, but the one looks like a D0,
Yeah, that's not precisely right here, because the circle here, it's not quite the right way to think about it. So the, how do I say it? Just the careful scaling of the coordinates. I mean, I'm not giving a good physical explanation for why that's true, but that's actually not the case here. Here the circle is actually small, but the theory here never reduces to quantum mechanics. It actually is always a two-dimensional field theory. That was actually a surprise. I think the intuition you just was what I was originally the original way I was actually thinking it would come out. When we actually looked at it, it didn't come out that way at all. It actually looks like near the Big Bang, the theory is free perturbative matrices. It's free Yang nulls, basically. It's going to become more free, as I'll show you in a moment, as we approach the Big Bang. Okay. Actually, I don't want to go over. Time should come to an end. That's really hot now. So I'll spend just a couple minutes more explaining why this decouples and just fleshing out this picture, if you guys have the patience. Okay. So, so we should ask ourselves, what's the regime of validity? So I claim to you that these things decouple. But that's really the heart of the question. Is this really going to be Yang-Mills theory? Or is gravity going to recouple as we approach this strong gravity regime in space-time and the picture breaks down? So at least formally, I want to argue that there is honest-to-goodness decoupling. So we're starting off with energies of order E minus, and then by this boost, we're ending up with energies of order epsilon. But our world sheet of order epsilon with respect to the coordinates x plus, x minus, x I. But our world sheet time is related to x plus by a factor of r, which involved epsilon. So the fact that on the world sheet, x plus was of order tau over r means that the typical energies we need to study on the world sheet are of order epsilon E minus over R, of order E minus L string over R. So, we can ask two questions. The first question is, do open string oscillators decouple? Or do oscillators decouple in this setup? So to see that, I unfortunately just erased the metric, we were studying these strings in a metric that looks like times flat. It has this factor in front, R, the scale factor, which means that there's an effective string length, L string effective, which is time dependent, and which goes like I can read it. Square root R. Yes. So for open string oscillators to decouple, we want to consider our characteristic space-time energy, which is epsilon E minus times L string effective, and ask whether this thing vanishes. So this looks like L string cubed over R E minus E to the minus epsilon Q X plus over 2. So this is time dependent now. So the question of decoupling is actually one of what time you're looking at. But if we strictly take the epsilon to 0 limit, this will vanish. So this goes to 0 as epsilon goes to 0 for all times. So open string oscillators decouple, apparently. How about gravity? Well, for gravity, we want to ask about the effective G Newton, which goes like G string squared L string effective 2 to the A, which is L string to the 8th over R squared e to the minus 2 epsilon QX plus. So, we do the same exercise. We look at a characteristic, we look at our characteristic spacetime energy, epsilon E minus, and we ask ourselves, is the gravitational coupling, the effective dimensionless gravitational coupling, vanishing or not? Okay. So, we then want to consider G Newton, epsilon E minus to the 8th power. And this thing goes like epsilon to the 6th, E minus to the 8th, E to the minus 2 epsilon QX plus, which is all over R squared, which again vanishes in the limit where we take epsilon to 0. So the coupling to gravity also seems to be vanishing. So at least formal decoupling arguments would tell us that this description in terms of these matrix strings on this Milne space is really going to be, hopefully, a complete description of the theory. Now, formal decoupling arguments can break down, but we won't know that without doing some kind of quantum mechanical computation. Let's look at G Yang Mills, just to make sure this all makes sense, which is we express in terms of G string and L string, went like 1 over G string L string, which goes like 1 over L string, E to the subfactors of pi, L string over R, Q, the worksheet time tau, makes sense. So in this limit, we're getting parameters from our Yang Mills theory that are sensible. We have a time dependent Yang Mills coupling. Note that as tau goes to minus infinity, this vanishes. So the theory is becoming more and more perturbative as we approach the Big Bang. It's getting strongly coupled as we go to late time. This is somehow very pleasing because the strong coupling limit of that theory is perturbative, standard perturbative string theory, and that's exactly where we expect to see standard perturbative string theory. Whereas as we approach the Big Bang, we seem to be seeing perturbative matrices just interacting, almost free. So, the last scaling we should look at is, let's compare G Yang Mills, which is dimension 4, to the typical energy on the worksheet, respect to worksheet time. So, that's the typical energy in this case. And I'll stick in the factor of n gratuitously. Root 2 pi r string over r q tau all over P upper plus E minus L string squared. So this is just telling us that compared to the typical worksheet energy that we want to study for a worksheet process, the coupling really is becoming small as we approach the Big Bang. So we have this very pretty picture of a Big Bang revolving in time on the worksheet. As we evolve, our Yang-Mills coupling is getting bigger, going to infinity as we evolve, and it's precisely our G flow here that corresponds to time evolution. So we have a direct correspondence between our G flow in our theory and time evolution on the worksheet, at least for finite n. So I leave you, since I've run over it considerably, I haven't had any time to come through the newer stuff that hopefully will appear very shortly, but this is an extremely interesting model, but it's very hard to compare with anything because there's no a priori definition of string theory in this background. There's no S matrix that we could say goes over in a limit to something. That's the kind of direction I've been pursuing more recently, where there's actually an initial S matrix and we can try to understand what's going on. Right. That's what seems to be coming out of this picture, exactly. But there is a, we specify some initial state in the field theory, we propagate it, it goes over into some perturbative string state at late time here, and there is something which is, it's not an S matrix of any standard kind. But I would like to have a situation where there's an S matrix and where I can take a limit. And I can ask myself whether you can go through a big crunch. Well, yeah, so that's good in this background, but there are other backgrounds that one can do analogous. I mean, it would be nice, I would like to have a case where I can actually compare. Take a two-point function on each side of a singularity and ask, or a non-singularity and ask as a in the limit where it becomes singular, what's happening in a perturbative regime. But just to make sense out of this Yang-Mills theory is quite a tricky business in its own right. There's no conserved energy. Notions like Wilsonian RG going down to the infrared are much harder to think about than they were in the standard field theory. And the mashing onto, even the mashing, well, certain things seem to work, certain things are hard to analyze. So there's actually a considerable amount to understand in the story, including whether it all really makes sense. Okay, time has come to an end. Thank you.
Can you compute graviton scattering?
Well, you can see that at late times it goes over to... Well, yeah, so, okay. The first thing is, there aren't really any gravitons near the singularity. They're really perturbative matrices. So you do calculations in perturbative Yang-Mills with perturbative matrices. But at late times, you will recover string field theory in this light-like linear dilaton background. And you, in principle, should recover those calculations, yeah. Yeah, you can actually see that you do recover, basically, the right string field theory with the right factors of e to the minus tau inserted in these diagrams that you draw in string field theory.
Why do you use the standard string perturbation theory, not the matrix model?
Well, you can do that in the late time regime, but it breaks down, right? There's an integral over x plus, and you're...
It becomes down-coupling.
Right. Right.
So does this answer the original question? Do you have sort of a finite description of the singularity that, in principle, makes everything calculable?
I hesitate to say yes without understanding the Yang-Mills theory better, but I would say naively it's a classical picture which is weakly coupled at the singularity, in fact, free at the singularity itself. So then there's a question of whether you start to engage theory back reaction, you'll run into problems, or whether you can actually make sense of the gauge theory on the space. Mm-hmm. The space is very strange. It's not. It has all kinds of peculiarities, which, I mean, it looks, it's a very simple metric, but like Lorentzian orbifold, for example, is not Hausdorff, and there's all kinds of potential places where you could run into problems. But I think it's certainly the right starting point to try to make sense out of the singularity.
So you don't, at least naively, you don't see any infinities or anything that would obviously spoil things.
Right. That's right. Okay. Yeah. They're kind of mild divergences that come about when you try to do gauge theory scattering, but whether they're actually physical divergences you associate to the singularity or just to the fact that you're doing two-dimensional field theory mm-hmm. are not obvious. I mean, you have to unentangle the physics of the singularity with just standard problems that you have in two dimensions. And there was some issue there. But it's something we don't understand very well. Because it really depends on your vacuum choice as well. As I say, there isn't a natural vacuum. There are at least two natural vacuum.
I guess the it seems what's clear in there at the beginning is that all the momentum nodes in the gauge would go off the very high energy and they could start out in some reverse state, but it's less than zero nodes and then I get some freedom away from the
Oh, for the zero nodes? Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's still a possibility you could go through, for example, and you have to include the back region. In that Lorentzian orbifold, there were four regions: these kind of whisker regions, so closed time-like curves, and this kind of Milne region here, and a back McMillan region. So we see this region, but perhaps to make the theory complete, you really need to have a pre-Big Bang. I would say at the moment there's no real evidence in favor of that, but this is another reason why I wanted an example with a S matrix initially to see whether or not you just end there or you can't end there. At the moment it looks like you specify an initial state and you propagate from that.
There's, if you take the, so you're reducing the problem to a gauge theory question, albeit larger and all that, mm-hmm. in space, which is not the usual space, but usually in gauge theory, weak rotation is more or less under, I mean, believable, right? I mean, we usually do weak rotation without worrying about it.
Right.
So if you did weak rotation here, the space becomes flat.
Yeah.
Your free angle is almost obviously free because you're chucked. Is that right or not? You're just talking about you're approaching a point.
Yeah, I think weak rotation here is problematic.
Why is that?
Precisely because this thing really does have a singularity at the origin. So, for example, if we had not compactified the circle...
Oh, because of the curve, you're saying there's a curvature.
Wow. It's morally flat, but there is
there's an orbifold point that's curvature.
Yeah, there is an orbifold point.
So you're saying there's a Yang-Yuzla orbifold singularity?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that easier to study?
I don't know, maybe. I think you run into trouble if you try to weak rotate naively. That would be problematic. You really have to treat the theory in Lorentzian signature on this time-dependent space.
You could work on a cone.
Yeah, actually, a very natural procedure is to try and treat it like string theory on an overflow.
Yeah.
Just Yang-Mills and try to see what's happening just with that. Yeah, that's a very natural way to try and do this, which has not been done, actually.
The other question is that presumably you can generalize this background. So the main thing as far as the novelty, as far as the matrix model theory goes, is that you have taken a background from S1 time to some other background.
Yeah.
You could now ask more general backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could ask what does it map to, what kind of questions. And in fact, you could ask well, maybe there are easier backgrounds you could study the gauge theory on, and what kind of answers to what question has that been?
No, it hasn't been done. Actually, it's very natural to take a two-dimensional cosmology and say non-singular. And use that as a string well sheet, and then ask, see what it becomes. Yeah, yeah, that has
the inverse question. Yeah. Might be easy.
No, I mean, yeah, this, yeah, given that this, yeah, there's very little yet done on this, I would say, beyond sort of the original.
Well, these strings have winding modes.
Ah, well, you're asking really, do these Yang-Mills degrees of freedom have? So that's a good question. So in the space-time approach to Milne, people have studied condensation of winding modes. Bakus and Piolin and these guys. I mean, as I say, it could not cure the pathologies of the breakdown at tree level in string perturbation theory, but it's interesting in its own right. So you can ask the same question
if
here.
If you're looking at D-string winding modes rather than F-string winding modes, that's non-perturbative.
There will be some electric flux here that... Yeah, so there could be some electric flux here which... is becoming dominant as you approach the Big Bang point. No, I should stress that essentially all of these questions are open at this point. This is a classical model, the quantum mechanics of which needs to be understood which is also exciting in a way, because to see what happens.
Any other questions? Thanks, Oliver.